and welcome to Inside the Disney Vault, the only podcast to go over every single Disney animated movie in chronological order, every Pixar movie in chronological order, every DCOM in chronological order. But now we're taking back and we're doing this bizarre live action animation hybrid. We'll talk about that later. But first, I'm Oscar.
I'm Claire.
And I'm Rachel.
And today, joining us on the podcast, we have the special guest, the one, the only, the host of Gayest Episode Ever. We have Drew Mackey.
Yay!
Hello.
What do you all see in this area of the vault?
I see a lot of casual alcoholism happening here
oh,
in this
absolutely.
Town.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I see wet cement.
I see a hole in this school that looks like a dragon shape.
Yes. Yeah.
I see a young lead actor who looks remarkably like Leah Thompson.
Oh. I mean, obviously, we are talking about Pete's dragon.
Leah Thompson. Oh my god.
He was reminding me of somebody. Is that who it was?
It took me until like the last 20 minutes of this 2-hour movie to be like, who does it look like? Because I didn't think Leah Thompson. And then it was definitely Leah Thompson. Yeah, it's really
Is there
weird.
Any
like,
relation? I wonder.
No, I looked and there's no relation. He's not a showbiz family at all. Not related. He just looks like
because
Leah Thompson.
You're not wrong is the thing, Drew. You're not wrong.
Oh my gosh, that's very, very funny. His voice I think was reminding me of something as well, or someone, but I couldn't place it, so maybe we'll continue to find the similarities. So had you all seen this movie before? Also, by the way, we're talking about the 1977 version,
right?
Because there is a
2016 okay, live action or CG live action remake of
like
Pete's
the
Dragon.
Lion King version of
exactly yes.
of Pete's yeah. Dragon,
which is like if listen out of all of the properties Disney has, I have no idea why Pete's Dragon
this
should
one,
be the one to get
yeah.
a remake.
This one was weirdly like a nostalgic, like a lot of Disney fans know it because it was weirdly represented a lot in Disney, like the parks I know. So like, I guess it's popular and maybe that's why it was chosen for a remake.
Mm.
I don't know. I had seen it before, but I didn't remember any of it except for the candle song.
Mm. Right, well, right.
That's the most important thing to know, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
True.
The candle song, right?
A candle on the water.
Yes.
Was nominated for an Oscar. This one was nominated for 2 Oscars. That was one of them. I guess. Oh, we'll do things a little out of order. I could do some. Bare Necessities about Pete's Dragon. So originally, this movie premiered November 3rd, 1977. The budget was $10 million. Wow. Box office returns were somewhere between $36 million and $39 million. So it wasn't a huge success. And IMDb claimed it's because this came out around the same time as Star Wars.
Oh, boo, Star
But
Wars.
I don't know. I don't know if you could.
Okay.
I don't know.
Blame it on Star Wars. Okay.
So I saw that and I looked it up. And Star Wars came out like months and months and months before this. So people were still seeing. Like Star Wars came out in spring and this came out in November. And people were still going to see Star Wars. But I don't know if like you came out 6 months after Star Wars. You can be like, Star Wars stole our audience because all the... Like, it's very not the same.
People
audience.
Going for the fifth
the
and sixth
money.
Time to exactly. Star Wars instead of Pete's Dragon.
Yeah.
So
Disney
funny.
Was like, "I'm gonna get you back, Star Wars. One day, I'm gonna buy you."
Yeah. And it all started from this
yeah.
moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So yeah. of course, so they were trying to do another sort of like Mary Poppins style cartoon situation. However, this movie was not as successful. And originally, Elliot was not even supposed to be seen at all. And he was supposed to remain invisible. But members of the studio animation department gradually lobbied the studio heads to increase the amount of screen time. And so he ends up spending 22 minutes visible in the movie.
Good.
And animators Don Bluth and Gary
22
Goldman.
Out of like the 2 and some change
it is
hours?
So long.
It is a lengthy film.
Yes. Yeah. I noticed this scenes could easily have been halved and had the same impact, I felt, in a lot of...
More songs. More
songs. It's true. It didn't have that many songs in it. So I guess the animators apparently worked 100 hours per week during production to animate Elliot. And when they applied for overtime, the superiors suggested that they instead receive 1 hour off for each hour of overtime. And that added up to 6 weeks off of time. And they used that time to work on their own private project, Banjo the Woodpile Cat, and also this led to Don Bluth leaving Disney.
Gotcha. Yeah. And doing his own thing, which it was a big thing. Don Bluth is a legendary animator, so.
And he took a lot of animators with him. It was a big deal. They like all piled up in one car. I watched a documentary. They said that they all piled up in one car, and I was like, I don't think that happened, but.
Like clowns.
It's good for the story. And so the lighthouse from the film was built for it, and it had to be approved by the Coast Guard to operate it, since during filming would have confused passing ships. Pacific Gas and Electric opened the Point Bouchon Trail and allows hikers to access where the filming took place. And even though it was supposed to be on the East Coast, it was filmed in California.
Like, it is like so very recognizably like Central California coast. Like, this is you're in Santa Clarita. You are nowhere near Maine right now, but okay.
Which is weird. The fact that it takes place in Maine was such a shock to me, because the first 10 seconds when you meet that hillbilly family, you're like, oh, this is like the Deep South or something. But it's Maine?
It's okay. Maine.
Why didn't they just set it in California? We have lighthouses on this coast, too.
True.
We have fishermen. We have orphans. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think maybe because, like, this was supposed to take place in the early 1900s, I think.
Yeah.
No, but California was already popping off in the 1900s.
We were thinking back then.
I'm sorry. I can't defend this movie. I'm trying.
I don't know. But also, at one point, they wanted to bring the lighthouse to Disneyland, but I think it was too fragile to do so. They left it.
They didn't finish painting it,
I was wondering, the town that they were in, was that part of that old West? They used to have a Western lot at the Disney Studios, which has now become a parking lot.
Oh, but I don't know. I would have to look it up.
It's where they shot Zorro, the TV show Zorro, because that's why it's called the Zorro parking structure.
So very quickly, we can go over our cast. We have Sean Marshall as Pete, Helen Reddy as Nora, Mickey Rooney as Lampy, Jim Dale as Dr. Terminus, Red Buttons as Hoagie, Shelley Winters as Lena Gogan.
Shelley Winters? Shut up. Fuck up right now.
You didn't notice it was her?
Did you watch the movie?
That was Shelley. Miss Browse was Shelley Winters.
Yeah.
Yes.
Former sexy bombshell Shelley Winters played the mother hillbilly.
I don't know what's right.
Oh, well, I guess maybe to be fair, if you recognize her from when she's much younger, then maybe it makes sense. I recognize her from Roseanne.
Yes, that's what everyone our age would be like, that's Roseanne's grandma, which again is like weird to think, like, Roseanne's grandma was on that show? Weird. Okay. Yeah.
I've never seen Roseanne. Okay, I know her from, movies.
Yeah.
not this one, though.
Not this one.
Jane Keane as Miss Romy Taylor, Jim Bacchus as Mayor, Charles Tyner as Merle Gogan, and Gary Morgan and Jeff Conway as Grover
brothers?
And Willie Gogan, Carl Bartlett as Paul, Walter Barnes as captain of the ship, and Charlie Callis as the voice effects for Elliot.
Aha, yes.
And another fun fact, Joel Grey was considered to be for the role of Dr. Terminus.
And who is that?
Pirelli's Miracle Elixir guy.
Yeah, it's Jennifer Grey's dad. He's an actor before she was an actor, and he's gay now. He does a lot of theater stuff.
What?
The original wizard in Wicked?
If you look up a picture, you'd be like, okay, him.
Yes, I'm sure you're very familiar with the original
Mr.
Broadway
Wicked.
Cast
yes,
of Wicked.
Of course, Mr. Wicked. Yes.
Mr. Wicked.
Mr. Wicked.
Oh, brother.
Wait, so I know Rachel's seen this movie before. Claire, have you seen this movie before?
No, I remember waking up to it after having fallen asleep on the couch with Disney Channel on, but never all the way.
I've never seen it before. Drew, I believe you've seen it before, yes?
When I was a kid, we had Disney Channel when I was a kid, and in the early 80s, Disney Channel was like a weird mix of like whatever they could throw on, and this played kind of not infrequently. So I saw it a few times when I was a kid, which is wild because I was a kid, and I don't know how I sat through 2 hours where there's like not a lot that happens in chunks. There are parts of this movie that are very good that I like a lot, but like it would be hard to keep a kid in a theater for 2 hours, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I think we just had better, like, I don't know. I think we sat through a lot of stuff when we were younger, maybe, because I can't imagine being a child today and watching this movie in one sitting.
Well, I remember being little and sitting through movies like Mary Poppins and definitely knowing which parts were very boring in my mind. Mm. Usually the old men singing scenes.
The bank stuff.
The bank stuff. Yeah. I would always tune out. So I imagine for Pete's Dragon, it has the same thing because there are similar sequences.
Yeah, there's parts in both these movies where they're just like, and now these people are going to do their dance. And you're like, that's another 10 fucking minutes. But okay.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Wait, so Drew, I want to know, what is your connection to Disney? Would you consider yourself like a Disney freak?
No. So here's my thing. Grew up on Disney Channel. Little Mermaid came out when I was like 7, so I was the perfect age to receive that movie. Liked it a lot, but then I got made fun of for liking Little Mermaid because it was a girl's movie, which I'm like, it's a really good movie. Like, you don't have to be a girl to appreciate it. As like a kid, I'm like, this seems wrong. Ooh, and they're like, you want to be Ariel? I'm like, yeah, she's awesome. I would totally want to be Ariel. But then I got embarrassed out of seeing a lot of other Disney movies. So most of like the girl-focused Disney movies I didn't see because I didn't want to get made fun of. And then I sort of came around to it. I have like huge missing chunks in my Disney experience, but though I'm not a super fan, I think, you know how like some people are like Disney obsessed and some people like hate everything Disney? I will always side with the Disney obsessed people because I'm like, I can't understand how anyone could just not want anything to do with anything Disney. It seems like such a weird sweeping thing. It's like, there's not one thing that you like in the entire catalog because it's a lot of fucking stuff, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They absolutely own everything now.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, now especially.
More than ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Man, wow. I know. Yeah, God, it really is everything. It's Marvel, Star Wars. What was
Muppets,
the third?
Muppets.
Yeah.
Simpsons.
Yeah.
Simpsons. Oh, my gosh,
anything
you're right. Yeah.
Fox related right now. They own it. Yeah.
Pretty amazing. And best of all, Pete's Dragon.
Best of all. Best of all.
Shall we fly into Pete's Dragon?
Yes.
All right. Pete's Dragon. We open up. We got... Okay, by the way, I know I'm gonna switch Pete and Elliot's names a lot.
Because Elliot's a weird name for a dragon, and it's never explained why his name is like just a normal human name rather than like a funny dragon name.
Absolutely. Yes. Also, yes. You know, not to get too ahead of this, but the movie's called Pete's Dragon, but there's a huge plot element in this movie that Pete is not owned by anyone.
Yes, right. This is a very good point.
Why can't it just be called Ellie the Dragon? You know, just inquiring minds want to know right off the bat. What
Pete
the heck's
and
happening?
His dragon friend.
Yeah.
Elliot.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. We'll come up with some theories. So Pete floats in on an invisible Elliot and all
jarring.
Of the Beverly Hillbillies.
I gotta say right now, jarring.
Jarring. And the sounds he's making, he's like whispering and it's like creepy and strange and they're in a dark forest and the Beverly Hillbillies come looking for them and then they sing a song called The Happiest Home in These Hills. They're actually named the Gogans. Sorry,
Listen, the opening song is about murdering a child. And I'm like, this is weird. This
violent,
is very
what
graphic.
I expected. Yeah. Explicitly, yes.
Yes.
I kind of was here for it, though. I did like the song.
It was catchy. I think it's actually one of the better songs.
Melodically, it was really cool. Weird.
It's interesting because, yeah, it's not your typical, it's not like an opening number. It's like a variety number kind of thing, like that you would usually find in the middle of the show. But yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's what they're saying is terrible, but it was a very fun, upbeat song.
Yeah.
So essentially, Elliot is an orphan who was adopted, quote unquote, by these people.
Pete is an orphan.
Dang it.
You already did it again.
Pete.
Let's assume if we say Pete or Elliot, we're referring to either the child or the dragon. We just have to figure out from context what we mean. Because we're all going to fuck it up numerous times. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
So Pete has run away with the help of Elliot, and they're hiding in the forest.
Yes. And a thing that Elliot does is that he can turn invisible.
Yes.
Why? We never know. We just never, ever know. But no. Okay.
We never
but
know.
He does do that in the Main Street Electrical Light Parade because his lights go out.
That's
and he's
right.
invisible, and then they come back on, and there he is.
Yeah, and Pete's like, Elliot, and he like counts him down. He's like, one, two, three.
Yeah, the Pete in the parade is always like a man wearing the weirdest wig, and he's always like, hey, guys, I'm Pete.
Why is he British?
I don't know.
Yeah, wait, he's British in the parade, isn't he?
I think he's something. I don't know.
He's also wearing the schoolboy outfit.
Yeah, it's a really... It's yeah, that's where I'm like, that outfit is like the outfit I think of, but he's not wearing that in most of the movies.
We see it in what 30 minutes, not yeah. 30 minutes, less, 30 less seconds of it. Yeah,
I guess there's a choice between that and tattered rags, and they went with not tattered rags.
Yes, like whenever you see Annie, Little Orphan Annie, she's always in her like Christmas dress. Bedazzled mm-hmm. fancy look. So Elliot materializes the next morning, and he and Pete eat apples.
I have something to share about the Gogans. One of the two Gogan brothers is Jeff Conway, who's Kanicki from Grease.
Yes.
So like 2 years after this, he was in Grease, but at this point in his career, he was sub Kanicki in levels of fame, and he's just like one of two interchangeable like Gross brothers.
Yeah, it's so funny to see
him.
to see him.
Holy
there.
Cow. What the?
I couldn't tell who anyone was because they were all covered in dirt. They were like
covered in dirt and then mud. It's like, yeah. Oh, these people are nasty. Oh yeah, a big thing that Shelley Winters kept saying was that she bought Pete for $50.50 with fees, which I thought was a really funny detail. But like a big reason why they want Pete back is so he can do chores on a farm or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which to me is interesting because again, not to jump ahead, but he ends up doing chores for the lighthouse people, so I'm like okay, what are you, what, okay, sure. Okay,
but Nora is clean and the Gogans are pretty.
Yeah.
It's better,
right?
Nora
right.
takes baths,
right? But the Gogans threaten to burn him lightly so he doesn't feel pain when they eat him, I guess. And I guess Nora loves him or whatever.
Yeah. Nora never threatens to kill Pete.
Yeah.
That's a check mark in her favor.
And I guess so, that'll do it.
So Pete and Elliot sing Boo Bop 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 I Love You Too together, which is very cute.
Is that the official title of the song?
Yes.
Boo
yes.
Bop Bop.
Do you think I made that up?
Yes.
I could come up with that?
I think you did make it up. That sounds. If I had to make up a song title, it would sound like that.
Yeah, it's like a robot anthem or something.
I love you too.
So the two travel to a new town together.
Which is called?
I don't know.
Passamaquoddy.
What's it called, Drew?
Passamaquoddy?
Passamaquoddy. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Passamaquoddy.
And so Pete tells Elliot to make himself invisible because, you know, they don't want to make a big scene having a dragon enter.
Rude.
But because of this, Elliot knocks over a bunch of shit, and like while he's invisible, a horse runs away. He walks in the wet cement. The mayor falls off some stairs. It's chaos.
Yeah, Claire was probably not having a good time at this moment.
I was actually okay. I was like, okay. Because I could see like the invisible dragon doing it. It was fun.
Wait,
like the footprints in the cement was fun.
Okay.
Why would this scene be like unnerving for you?
Generally, when there are big action sequences, I tune out. But this to me was like,
this is canon. This is just Claire canon. Yeah.
To me was like fun. It wasn't okay. Like, oh boy, here comes a fight. That's when I normally tune out. Is when
but to me, there is a huge glaring issue here in this scene because when the school teacher shows up and the kids skippity hopping all their way to school, one of the kids asks like, what's going on? And for some reason, Pete, after telling Elliot to stay invisible, outs Elliot as being like, oh, my dragon is here, which is like defeats the purpose of making this dragon invisible. Okay, it's self-sabotage, I think. It's a toxic relationship between poor Elliot and Pete.
Right. Yeah. So at this point, it's like, are they just trying not to have to animate more?
By... Yes.
Probably.
I literally think that's why.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Yeah. Confusing. Yes. So this school teacher gets very upset, calls him an ignoramus for not going to school.
That's what if you do at Cracker Barrel, the little triangle game, if you have a bunch of them left over, you get called an ignoramus.
Oh.
Oh. Damn. Okay.
No, wow. Just... So Elliot, he's smart. He, I don't remember what he does, but he has a little comeback for her. And then we all this goop and goo again, back to our decoms, all over the mayor. Pete scolds Elliot for misbehaving, and then a very drunk Mickey Rooney runs into them. His name is Lampy, and this immediately I was like,
okay, thoughts on Mickey Rooney as Lampy.
I have thoughts on Mickey Rooney.
I don't think he's bad. Like, Mickey Rooney can be a lot sometimes. I actually think he's like, he's doing a decent job in this, but I'm mostly stuck on, do you think his name was Lampy and he just moved into the lighthouse because his name was Lampy? Or do you think they just call him Lampy because he lives in the lighthouse? In which case, what did they call him before he moved to the lighthouse?
Right. Which came first?
I don't know.
Probably Alky.
Alky's much better.
So
I mean, this man had a problem, right? Like, this was a serious, this person lived in that bar, like,
I felt afraid. That's how I felt.
Many
in the 70s, this was funny.
I guess so, for a kids movie, maybe.
Like, so yeah, like, there's a lot more drinking in this than I think anyone would expect in a kids movie. And it is weird because I was like, oh, like, they're going to address this at some point, and they don't really have anything to say about drinking. It's just a facet of life. It's just assumed that, like, lots of people in this town, I think Nora's the only adult we don't really see drinking at some point. Yeah. And it's sort of weird because you would expect now, if you're going to do, like, a substance abuse movie, you'd have to say something to kids, like, drinking too much is bad, I guess. But, like, he can see Elliot when he's drunk, so like, and that's supposed to be a good thing, that you can see the dragon. So like, drinking is actually a good thing because it allows you to like see the world like a child does, I guess. I really don't understand. It's a really weird takeaway.
Yes, because you're right, in this sequence he does see the dragon, and I guess the adults are trying to say, oh well, he was drunk, so he just was seeing things, and that's supposed to make up for it, but well, but it is a strange message.
Well, what's even stranger is that he sees the dragon, Elliot, which we all know and we recognize because we can see him too. Maybe we're drunk watching this. And then he goes to the bar and launches into that song of seeing a dragon. And it's nothing like Elliot at all. Like some menacing red-eyed beast or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, Elliot is cute as hell. What?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't believe you.
That is interesting. I don't believe you. I also have another question, because no one believes in the dragon, yet then, what's his name, Terminus, finds that book of potions, and that is supposed to be reality, and he actually is making potions, and there are dragons.
Yeah.
So I'm confused what is real, I guess, but we'll continue, I guess, to figure out what is
and we
going
will get
on.
To the bottom of this.
We will. Yeah. I am a scholar.
This whole thing just reminded me of Belle's dad when he's like, I saw the beast and he had fangs and he was scary. Yeah.
Maybe you're right. That's like, he's just telling a tall tale based off of something he did see. But
he's over exaggerating.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, in the bar he sings, I saw a dragon. And then he warns everybody, his daughter ends up taking him home. Is this
the
big group
yet.
Number?
This is
the big group number with everybody.
Number, yeah.
Okay, that's so this big crazy number happens, the whole bar.
At the bar where it's like that this poor bar is ruined at this point. There is so much beer just being thrown everywhere. There is a weird, I'm gonna say it, sexually assaulty thing that happens.
Yeah, at one point I'm like, I'm worried for this woman who is coming to this bar.
Same.
But like, she seems like she can hold her own, and she's like tossing it off like it's nothing. So I guess she doesn't view them as a threat, but it's weird to watch. But whatever.
It is very strange to watch, because all these men are so leery over her, because they're like, a woman in a bar. Mm-hmm. And she is dodging them and like holding her own. She's like walking on top of the barrel and all that stuff. It's very impressive. I gotta say, it's very impressive. It was kind of cool to see, but it was a little strange. These men sort of just like zombies trying to grab her or something.
But like, if you think about it being like, there's like sexual stuff going on in that scene. And then it ends with her standing on a barrel and the barrel, like there's a hole pops out right between where her legs are and shoots a geyser of foam. And then all the other barrels explode. And then everyone's just covered in foam. And it is, there's a very easy sexual read to this entire scene that is very strange. And I made a video and a GIF of it for Twitter as I was watching. It was like, people need to know about like this weird, like, gangbang orgy scene in a bar.
It ended up being a foam party for sure.
Yeah,
very wild. Also, like, does anybody work at this bar? Is anyone concerned that they're wasting product?
There's one guy in the bottom who's just like has his hands on his hips, and I think his role is like, you're not dancing, you're annoyed this is happening. I'm like, well, that's realism at least.
Yeah.
He's like,
the question is, how often does this happen?
Every day. Yeah. they order extra because they know this is gonna happen. So Nora takes her dad home, and again, there's so much creepy whispering that's happening. That was just like a way this film was made, I suppose, but I don't know. I was just put off by it. And then we go to Pete and Elliot in a nearby cave, and Nora finds Pete and offers him some chowder. And Pete explains how the Gogans are terrible to him and that he ran away from them.
Not only that, she's like, what's this bruise on your neck? And he's like, oh yeah, they beat me. Super casually, like, yeah, that's the fact of life or whatever.
Oh, it's so sad.
There's some real shit in this movie for sure.
I know. Yeah, it's very, very dark.
And so Nora's... the 70s.
The gritty the dark 70s. 70s. The gritty 70s. Pete's dragon brings the grit.
Yeah. Nora says that he's safe there, and he says no one's ever been that nice to him. And Pete
says... Which
is
sad. You know, I was sad about it, yeah.
Absolutely. Pete says he has a dragon and describes him to Nora. And then we get the song, It's Not Easy, which I do not remember.
It's great. I really like it. Listen, I'm going to say this. The song slapped.
Which song is this? Why can't I
it's
remember?
It's not easy. It was fun. It was cute.
I don't remember that.
It's very
it's
cute.
It's not easy to have a dragon. It's not easy to be in a terrible environment
that
I'm trying to escape from.
Yeah, it's interesting because the song was I had to escape with this dragon, but then it evolves into like, hey, you have another friend in me, because earlier, right before that, we find out that her betrothed was lost at sea for a year, Paul. And she couldn't and was like conveniently placed Paul. His like picture on the mantle or whatever. So she's going through loss as well, you know what I mean? So they're both wounded souls coming together at last.
Yes.
What do you guys think of Helen Reddy's singing voice?
I actually really love it. It is very strange. Is she? Who is she?
She's a singer. So she's an Aussie singer, but she had a crossover hit in America in the early 70s. It's that song, I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar.
Shut up. She sang that?
That's Helen Reddy. And then later she speaks dragon. She did some acting, not a lot of acting. She was mostly like 70s pop into adult contemporary later on.
What?
Yes, wow. I think some of the notes on this were saying, yeah, she didn't seem to do much after this.
She didn't.
I thought she was great.
She got some not great reviews for her acting, and I remember it wasn't on any of the places I read, but I have it in my head that she was just like, well, screw you guys, I don't need to be an actress, I'm a singer. And she mostly just sang, although weirdly, this is pulling way back, but it's still technically Disney. Family Guy did like an extended parody of Star Wars, like all three movies, and she's in it playing herself. Helen Reddy is playing herself in those Star Wars parodies, which is very strange. And it's actually one of the last things she did because she died not long after.
How is she associated with Star Wars?
I can't remember. She's one of the pilots, though. Like, it's in that scene when, like, all the pilots are saying they're ready. She says Helen Reddy, and she is one of the pilots version of the Resistance. It's really weird.
Star Wars. Oh, man. That's
I do like her. She's Australian, you said?
She's an Aussie. I don't know. She'd been here for a while, but like she's doing a decent job with the accent. Like I can't tell she's not from here.
I thought she was great.
Yeah, I liked her as well. And I don't know. I really believed the relationship between her and Pete. And I was surprised to read that as well. That it wasn't that well received.
This movie starts working for me. Like, this entire time, I'm like, okay, whatever. When there's a connection between her and the kid, I'm like, oh, like, this is pulling me in a way that, like, nothing else really has. Like, yeah. I think Elliot looks great. I think the way they animate him, it looks good for the time it came out. But, mm-hmm. like, I can believe that there's something real between this sad lady and this sad boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's very well put, actually. Yeah. So... they're sharing trauma together.
So Lampy goes nuts because he sees Pete again. And then we get, I kept referring to my notes as Pirelli, who's like the traveling salesman from Sweeney Todd, mm-hmm. who's a very similar character to, but it's Hoagie and Dr. Terminus. They ride into town on a wagon. And
who played Hoagie again?
Red Buttons.
Red Buttons. And that name sounds very familiar.
I actually don't know why I know his name. He did comedy stuff his entire life. Like, he's in stuff that we would have seen when we were kids, like this, I guess. But I don't know the single reason why he's famous, necessarily.
I see. Yeah. Well, with a name like Red Buttons.
Yeah.
We'll get the research department on it. So,
won an Oscar. In a 1957 movie called Sayonara.
Sayonara.
Okay. So the wet cement gets messed up again. The mayor falls on his face. We get them. They set up their little booth and the townspeople boo him.
Ooh, this is chaotic.
It really is. They're like, we do not want you here. Please leave our town.
They like crash into everything. And the only way they could break was dropping an anchor. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, sure.
Yes. So then we get the song Passamaquoddy.
Fun song. Very fun.
I can say it. Passamaquoddy.
Passamaquoddy. And let's see. Lampy,
well, he
says,
couldn't say it. He kept messing it up every time.
Lampy really saw a dragon, and it's unrealistic to wait for... Oh, okay. And he says to Nora, it's unrealistic for her to wait for Paul to come back.
Damn. Cold.
Yeah. And so Nora goes to the tower, the lighthouse.
This is it.
I'll be your candle on the water.
Yes.
It's a great song, I got to say.
Yeah.
Really sincere. She sang the hell out of it. She acted the hell out of it. I was very, very.
It's the only thing that stuck with me.
Yeah.
Also in the on
Frazzle Dazzle Day.
I will say cruise talk. So in the cruise ships, and I don't think they might have changed them, but in the staterooms, all the rooms, they have like a little artwork above the main bed, and it's just music notes to the song I'll Be Your Candle on the Water.
That's so nice.
A little nod to Pete's dragon, though I'm sure everyone's like, what's that? But whatever.
But because the real one
ship
know.
Is the candle on the water.
Oh, yeah, the ship is. Sure.
When I was a kid, I think this was probably like the boring part of the movie because I'm like, I'm not invested in this like adult woman's romantic feelings. But I did remember the song like in the back of my head. But did you guys ever watch that show Pushing Daisies?
Yes.
Okay, so there's an episode called The Legend of Merle McQuaddy. Yes.
Oh my God.
Where they do an extended, everything in the episode references Pete's dragon in one way or another. And Kristen Chenoweth comes in with like a gay barbershop quartet, and they do like an a cappella rendition of Candle on the Water. And it's really good. The episode is really good. You should watch it if you want to justify spending time thinking about Pete's dragon. But I heard it, and I was like, I have not heard this song since I was a kid. And then I am a person for whom a night activity might be drinking some wine and like watching videos on YouTube. And I ended up watching this clip, and I had just enough wine that it like hit me. I was like, this is the most beautiful thing in the world. It moved me emotionally in a way that I was not expecting. And it still does. I think it's one of, it's actually probably a personal favorite Disney song.
So did you know that there is another connection to Pete's Dragon and Pushing Daisies? Because Jim Dale, who plays Dr. Terminus is the narrator of Pushing Daisies.
Ah. That actually makes sense.
Which I didn't know, but I recognized the name, and then I looked it up. I was like, okay, now there we go. And he's also done a couple of things for Harry Potter, because I think he has a similar sound to is it Richard Attenborough? Who am I thinking? I don't know. This part might be incorrect. I have to double check that. But he has a great voice. Great voice.
He
great
does narrator. A good voice.
Yeah.
He played, I mean, he's really good as Dr. Terminus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, he's a snake oil salesman, but also a bumbling idiot at yes. the same time.
They but also the... might be legit, because he's actually yeah. making potions. So I don't know what's true.
He could be a witch.
I think his old potions were bogus, and now he's planning to make potions that actually work with the dragon, but obviously not going to happen. I don't want to like make everyone be like, oh, you made me think of that. He reminds me of Donald Trump, because he's like a snake oil salesman who's like stupid, and like with a flashy song, he makes the entire town, the town's mean like, we hate you, go away, and then he makes them all like them, and I'm like, oh, this is gross.
Drew, you're totally right, because there's history between him and the town, right? He's been there before, he scammed them before, he shows up, oh my god, this is a perfect allegory of like Trump like campaigning for a re-election.
Yeah.
Ooh,
it's like, you know who he is. Don't listen to him, townsfolk. And then they're like, we love you now for no reason. Right.
And then Red Buttons does like these two characters as testimonials, and no one in the town clocks them as people that don't live in that town. Yeah.
These two remind me of the two from Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, not to go back, but the corrections department would like to say Jim Dale narrated the Harry Potter books. Richard Attenborough is what's his face from Jurassic Park, who I'm conflating with David Attenborough, I believe, who narrates Planet Earth, etc.
Yes,
I see.
I've listened to those Harry Potter audiobooks because I was like, I'll read it, but I'll just listen to it.
Does he do it with Does he do it with a British accent or a English or American accent?
It's British, I believe. Yeah, they're very magical. He's wonderful.
He's British. He's also a non-English speaker and doing like a phenomenal. I guess it's more impressive because he's like an actor in Helen Reddy. He's like a singer actor, but like I wouldn't have ever guessed he was British just listening to him talk. He does a good job.
Yeah. Wow. He was great. He's got beautiful eyes. I was actually kind of like drawn to him in a way. I was like, am I attracted to this scam artist?
he's caught for that kind of character.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like strong jawed, like, oh, the eyes. I really couldn't. I was like, okay, I need to calm down. I was really sold with his eyeballs. They were cute.
So Pete gets a new suit and he wants Elliot to help him find Paul for Nora.
Which is sweet. Very sweet.
Yeah. So also I do wonder, does this mean Elliot has other magical powers? Or he can fly, I suppose, so he can go to the ocean.
He can fly not super well. Like he's not a graceful flyer.
No. Right. No. Yeah. I mean, logistically, Elliot's a big dragon he's got little tiny pink ass wings, you know.
He's like those funny little beetles, you know, who like it's like their wings are a little too small for their bodies. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen them.
So they're flapping extra hard.
Yes, mm-hmm. Kind of.
He also has like a tail that has, I assume, an appendage or maybe hair. I don't know what it is, but it can grab things.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Which I'm like, what's the science? What's the science there? What's going on there?
Mm. Yeah. Well, Pete described him as a bunch of different animals put together at one point.
Yeah, but he started saying head of a camel, and I was like, okay, I don't believe him.
Yeah.
Because that's not a head of a camel.
Yeah, he doesn't really look like a camel. But it's in this scene, actually. It's right after the scene. He has the suit, he's going to school, and they meet the kids who are like, oh, you're the dragon boy, what does he look like? And that's when he describes the dragon, not as he looks in the movie. Although... to his credit, no one making this movie knew what the dragon would have looked like until, like, they had no
That's a good point.
Idea. Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's just like, well, I'll say anything. And the image, we'll make it maybe, perhaps.
And maybe the dragon looks different depending on who's looking at it. Do you know what I mean?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Because, I mean, he seems like an ephemeral being that goes to whoever needs him. Mm-hmm. So he looks differently to other people, I guess.
So we all see him as the same, though, the audience.
Yes.
That's true. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. But then maybe not in 1977. Maybe in 2022, he looks like that. Maybe in 1977, he does have a head of a camel. I don't know. Wow.
It's changed.
I mean, I've never really looked at a camel.
I think it's camel-like.
He kind of has like a camel-like snout, I guess. It's not how I would describe it.
Then they said cow ears, I think. So that's why they're kind of pointed down.
Okay. Yeah. He looks like the reluctant dragon.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even realize those were different characters.
Oh, wow. Okay. So he does look like the reluctant dragon.
I just didn't remember. I actually, now I need to look it up. All right. So Dr. Terminus peddles his potions in the bar. And he says that this town is the worst one on their route, which is not very surprising because they didn't want him there in the first place. And then Lampy comes in and tells him that he saw a dragon. And Hoagie and Dr. Terminus get excited because they could use a dragon. And so Lampy and Hoagie drunkenly go to look for the dragon.
Wait, I have a question, though, because I have something that happens in this scene that I was very confused by, and I want, maybe if we don't know the answer, someone listening to the podcast will know the answer. When Lampy's like, what do you know about dragons? Dr. Terminus's reply is like, I've seen them in the cities and the streets with their funny walk. And like,
oh my God, Drew.
Is he talking about drag queens?
Yes, or? I think so. I think so. Or homosexuals.
Oh.
Yeah, like drag in like the queer sense. That's the only explanation, because I put it on Twitter and I'm like, someone tell me what's the joke here, because I don't get it. And one person replied with like, I think they're talking about drag queens. And I'm like, that is what I thought too, but no one else really replied. And I just don't know how else to interpret that line, unless it's a reference to like something like of the period that I'm just not getting. But like, that it's like sort of like a joke, and then because like Mickey Rooney's like no, like a real dragon, and they drop it and don't ever go back to it.
It's dismissed. Absolutely. Yeah, when I was watching it, I took it to mean gay people, like
funny very walk, flamboyant, colorful clothing. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that was
dandies, if you will, at the time. Oh. I think would be a more time appropriate term, but yeah, absolutely. Because I was like, what is this joke? Who is this joke meant? It's not meant for children, I don't think. And no. The adults aren't really getting this. It was a very weird aside. It didn't make sense. But yes, thank you for clocking that, because I clocked it too.
That's interesting. Yeah, sometimes, I didn't even catch that, because sometimes with these characters, I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about or if it's a real reference. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's really interesting. So they go to the cave to look for the dragon. And Lampy and Hoagie get Elliot drunk. They offer him alcohol, and he breathes fire. And then Hoagie tells, my names are all messed up in here. Hoagie tells Dr. Terminus about this meeting.
Yes, and this is the scene where Dr. Terminus is like holding this man in like a saw-like contraption. Yes, is that where we're at?
Yeah, that was weird.
What was this procedure?
It's a
tooth extraction or something.
It could have been like dental stuff, but like, yeah, if I don't remember this when I was a kid, but this is the kind of thing that would have scared me as a kid, just because I'm like, Mom, Dad, what is that? Why is that happening?
Because the way he explains it, because he leaves with Hoagie to see to look at Pete's dragon, but he tells the man, he's like, put your foot on the pedal, and if you let go, your jaw will snap and it'll break through the gums. And it's like, this is straight up. Do you want to play a game? Jigsaw territory right now.
Yeah. No, I didn't like that.
And we never saw that man again.
We never go. They're like, that's it. That's all you get of that. It's not important. You're like,
oh. That's a different movie.
Yeah.
Wild stuff happening. So Nora takes Pete to school. Mm-hmm. And the teacher seemed like all the other kids are excited because they know about Pete's dragon.
Right.
Slash,
and then they get a song right before where it's like, make way for everybody, including
dragons.
Yes,
there's room for everyone. Yeah, exactly. Because right before this, the fishermen are blaming Pete, that the fish have disappeared. They're like, ever since you came to town, a bunch of stuff's been going wrong for us. And this is where Nora, yeah, she really sticks up for him and, you know, sings, yes, there's room for everyone. But then it ends on the way God planned, which all of a sudden was like a turn at the end of the song to me. I was like, oh, that feels like a different message. But anyway, they go to school and this teacher really seems to just hate everyone. Mm-hmm.
Specifically Nora. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it did seem like there was some history between these two women.
You know, the lady, she used to date Paul, and
that's it. And that's
she's
it.
Upset. She's upset. We never Paul see picked Nora.
They call her Miss, and we never see her with a man or anything. And apparently there's a short supply of dateable men in this town because most of them are
drunks.
Did you guys notice that in the town scenes, there is a single black family?
That's
true.
And I
was surprised to see that. I was like, oh, that's, I mean, it's just a husband, wife, but that's more than you'd normally see in a movie from this era. And absolutely. I was like, I'm glad that they at least, at the very least, were like, let's have two non-white people live in this town.
I saw that too. And I was like, whoa, especially because it was supposed to take place in the 1900s. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Very nice. And also like, yes, it would make sense that these people of color would not be involved in the caucasity of all that nonsense in this movie. Mm-hmm. They're just like, we're going to mind our own business.
Okay, what happened? Oh, then okay. They go to school. Hates everyone. Yeah. And, Elliot rings the Elliot rings the bell outside, and Pete's like, "Oh, I'll go handle this." But the teacher thinks that he's lying, even though he's like, "It's my dragon," and she slaps him on the wrist with a ruler. Very, you know, remember when that was a thing?
Knuckle something.
Knuckle breaker or something like that.
Oh, yeah, knuckle breaker.
Something really awful sounding. Yeah. Elliot causes more chaos in class.
Yeah, she puts a dunce cap on him.
Yeah.
And makes him sit in the corner. And then she goes back to sit down. And then moves the chair. Yeah. And she falls on her ass. And then she then heightens this game and gives him a backbreaker?
She's going to spank him, I think.
Yeah, she's going to give him a spanking. Yeah. Then Elliot loses it. That's when he goes nuts and breaks through the wall, cartoon style, like Rachel mentioned.
I
love that cutout. It's always funny when you see Elliot in like the affected by the real world, I guess. Like you see his outline or that time when they have the tarp over him so you can see the shape of him, but he's not in animated form. It's funny.
I guess they kind of knew what he was going to be animated like because of that cutout.
Because, that's true. Oh, it matches. True.
Yeah. So there's the hole in the wall and Terminus sees it and his assistant boasts.
I mean, the whole town sees this. They see a giant figure breaking through a school and he's dragging the bell and people still don't believe poor Pete. Oh my God, the poor child.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like you all saw that happen. Like everyone has to believe that something weird happened. At least this little boy is possessed or something.
Right.
But like, it's weird that anyone would be like, I'm choosing not to believe it now.
And Nora was there. She still didn't believe his ass. I was like, what is going on here? And absolutely, Drew, I feel like if this was skewered a little too, like if we put the horror dial a little bit up, this could easily be a possession movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So Terminus decides he wants to buy the dragon. And he says so many cures from bits of dragon.
Yeah.
And this is where I was starting to wonder what his real skills are. Because he seemed to know what he was talking about.
He's a witch?
Oh,
witch.
He's a witch.
Mm-hmm. Witch.
I would love that. I would love to see that movie. And so he sings every little piece. And Dr. Terminus and Hoagie go to Nora's and they ask to buy Elliot. However, Pete says no because he does not own Elliot. And then, so he's bargaining with him, but Pete, you know, very much is like, no, this is not my dragon. So Nora and Lampy invite Pete to live with them.
Which is great. Yeah, it's very sweet.
Which is great.
And then they sing that song.
Yeah, Brazzle Dazzle Day. Mm-hmm.
Which is a very catchy song, but this is the point where I'm like, I feel like you're just padding this movie out because they're just cleaning the fucking lighthouse and you're just like,
with their butts.
With their butts.
This is the point to me in The Sound of Music when they get married and you're like, oh look, we're done, we solved it. And
but don't you think this seems to be like a nod to like Mary Poppins with like these make pretend songs, right, that are sort of just like silly and like not like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, like
this
that
wasn't sort of... the Sherman Brothers, right?
No,
the
it's Sherman, two by other now, guys.
Yeah, this? By now the Sherman Brothers had left Disney, I think, and were doing other things. So I think Disney was like,
Joel Hirschhorn. Yeah.
I bet Disney was like, let's do a Sherman Brothers like, because it felt like they were trying to do Sherman Brothers, but it wasn't right. Sherman Brothers.
Yeah.
I think originally it was not supposed to be a full musical. They only had one song, I think maybe it was Candle in the Water, but then they added more to it. So I think maybe that's why it feels a little bit like...
in-betweeny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it does, it definitely has many songs, but it does,
A lot.
So the Gogans arrive looking
finally. You're like, wait, are they ever coming back? And then they show up.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I was like, I thought the movie was over. No. And they're going to take him, and the brothers are very creepy.
Oh my god.
Nora.
So creepy. And the dad too. Let's not forget about the dad.
Oh, of course the dad is as well. And they get this is the song Bill of Sale, and yeah, they want to take him home.
This song could have been shorter because it was the same chorus repeated six times.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I really liked how Nora was sticking up for Pete here. She really, you know,
she likes him.
Cares for him. Yes. They get launched into the water by waves that Elliot creates.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Terminus talks to the Gogans because he wants the dragon and offers to help them get Pete so they could work together to each get what they want. And then they get a bunch of dudes to help them. I started to maybe tune out a little bit. So Nora tells Pete that Paul isn't coming home, and she tries to explain to him that dragons are not real.
Right.
Cut to Paul on the ship, and hey, he's still here. Mm-hmm.
I thought the effects on this was funny because you could see like the light changing of his outline of the background. I thought it was funny.
Was it like a scale model kind of thing?
I don't know what it was. It felt like, you know, in Photoshop, they Photoshopped them out, and then the background was different. So then the lighting would change of just them, but the background lighting would stay dark. So it was like, what's going on?
Yeah, there's some weird lighting stuff, too. At the beginning of the movie, when Pete and Elliot are sort of singing along on the road, Elliot flies around and changes color depending on where he's flying. Like, he was, like, really lit in one section and then really saturated in another section. I was like, oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah.
I guess the effort was really cool, but it just felt weird. It felt odd.
Yeah.
So Dr. Terminus kidnaps Pete and the Gogans go to get him, and he is bait for the trap that they're setting for Elliot. And Terminus riles Hoagie up to go to the cave and says, you know, you got to be the one to go get the dragon. So Elliot.
Elliot goes to
boo.
The...
Elliot. Okay. So I guess it was funny to me because Elliot's very playful. He's not a scary dragon the way everyone's making him out to be. And Hoagie tells Elliot that the Gogans, have Pete.
Right. Yeah. So then Elliot goes to the barn to find Elliot, and then of course Elliot is trapped into the tarp thing that we talked about earlier. And it does look really cool, but then they're trying to harpoon Elliot at the same time, which is kind of brutal. That harpoon looks serious, but it also works as a cannonball, I think, like a cannon where you have to light it up. I don't know how harpoons work, people, but I don't think they work this way.
No, that one does, though.
Oh, they got that specific model.
If someone listening is like a maritime expert and wants to explain to Oscar how harpoons work,
and only to me,
yes,
just DM me personally. And
we're good. We're good.
Don't, yeah,
they
don't
understand,
DM
and
me.
They won't tell me. They will not tell me.
No, I won't. I won't share that.
I don't want to.
So at sea, back at the lighthouse, the light goes out, And
yeah, because a huge wave goes all the way up and crashes through the water.
So has this never happened before? Is the window very weak? How do we build a lighthouse that won't break?
It's a tall wave. There's a tall wave.
Yeah. I guess that's why you have a person who lives in the White House to take care of these sorts of things. But like, it
does
seem
like... Wait, did you say White House?
Did I say White House? I meant lighthouse.
Person in the White House. I mean, it is a white. Take care of the
lighthouse. The lighthouse is white, so
it's true. Yeah. But yeah, I don't understand. I'm like, wouldn't that be like? Is that like a tsunami? Like, shouldn't that have wiped out the town? Oh well, we're just gonna keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. It seemed like it was a abnormal sort of weather condition that was happening.
It just jumped up. The wave jumped up.
I think maybe only twice though, and then it like calmed down a little bit.
Yeah, because then he was able to just try and relight it.
Yeah.
So Pete warns Elliot that it's a trap. Elliot gets caught. Oh, wait, we already said that. Mm-hmm. We saw that. Said that Elliot saves Pete.
Yes.
I might have done some dotting. they giggle.
He burns up the document that the lady has.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so now Pete's free. He doesn't have to go back to the. I was gonna say Gorgons, but that's not right. But I'm just gonna say Gorgons.
Gorgons, yes. So Terminus blasts through the roof, and Elliot scares them. Because
he was trying to harpoon Elliot, but then he realized that his foot was caught in the rope. So then he like moved it, but then he went flying with it. He should be dead.
Yeah.
But instead, he's just like hanging upside down in the middle of the town.
And then Elliot saves the mayor and that mean teacher from a falling electric pole. And so he's a hero and everybody appreciates him and sees that he's real. And then Elliot takes Pete to the lighthouse and he helps light the wick because he is a dragon who can breathe fire.
And then finally Nora sees that Elliot is real and that Elliot's really attracted to her. I don't know.
Yeah, and then she she immediately is like, I'm gonna kiss you, and he's like, no. He looks like no, because he immediately disappears when she does it. It's like,
oh yeah, yeah.
He didn't give consent. She was just like, I'm going to kiss you now. And he's like, whoa. Yeah. So I don't know. I didn't like that.
It felt strange. Paul returns. It's a miracle, he says. He had amnesia.
This is such a soap opera moment. He's like, my ship crashed and I landed in somewhere else and I lost my memory. But then I hit my head again because someone tilted my bed. And then I remembered Elliot's everything. Like, yeah.
Very convenient.
And then we get I Saw a Dragon reprise. Mm-hmm. They Make a Fool of the Mayor. Brazzle Dazzle Day reprise. Elliot appears. Pete says that they have a real family and a place to live now. And Elliot says he's got to go forever.
Yikes. He's got to save another kid. Goodbye.
Dragon
this
rolls.
Was where I realized he is Mary Poppins.
Yeah. Yeah. He very much is that.
Oh, yeah. Wait a second.
He came to help make sure Elliot got his family and then he left.
Except in Mary Poppins, it makes sense. It's like she's an itinerant nanny, and she works a job until she doesn't have to do it anymore, and then she goes somewhere else. And in this, we're just like, I guess dragons have to go? Like, how does he find the kid? Like, how
so
is
it's
he...
like, next time it's like Claire's dragon.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Rachel's
But again,
dragon.
Elliot doesn't belong dragon, to anybody.
No.
No.
But I call all of my friends mine, you know? Rachel's Oscar.
Oh,
Rachel's
Claire, Rachel. Oh, is that how you refer to us? Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Good to
it's
know.
Not actually, it's just, it's like an endearing term.
I see.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not meant to be, you know, like.
Oscar's human, and that could apply to anyone. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah. I was talking about Rachel, actually.
I'm changing my bio on all of my socials.
I have to go hang out with Oscar's human.
Oscar's human. That'd be so weird.
Wait. Oscar is human. No, Oscar's human.
Yeah, Oscar belonging. Yes, human belonging. Oscar's, but not belonging. No.
No, I don't. No.
No.
Yeah,
no. It's not. Yeah. No. It's it's a.
But I am Oscar's human.
Yes. And I am Rachel's.
It's a term
human.
Of endearment. Yeah. It doesn't. You obviously do not belong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like Pete said.
Mm-hmm. It's like in Pandora, the Avatar movies. Like I see you. That's how they say I love you.
Ah, okay, yes.
I don't know why I pressed
see
that.
You.
You love Avatar.
Disney. Then, that's Disney.
The is movie it, song.
Avatar's not Disney, is it?
Yeah, now it is.
Is it like retro? It's like retroactively Disney now.
They have a whole land of it at Disney World.
Do they?
Yeah.
This you can is go to all Pandora.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on YouTube and just
I won't.
Type Pandora. There's a ride.
It would be a good wine and YouTube night.
There's two rides. One where you ride a banshee and then one where you ride in a little thing and there's like a person that goes like this.
Doesn't that sound enticing, Drew?
Yeah.
No, I've never wanted to see the Avatar movies. Even when everyone was seeing them, I was like, I just don't want to. And then they're making like seven more of them. And I always was like, I wonder where the fan base is, but I guess it's you. And then the people that go to that park. But I had no idea that there was a park based on like Avatar, the James Cameron one with the aliens, right?
Yeah.
Not like Avatar the Last Airbender.
No.
Okay. Huh. I'm shocked to learn this is a thing. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
It is fun. I don't know the timeline for more movies. I don't know.
They're never going to happen.
I don't know who's more movie. I mean, yeah. It's something. But anyway, that's the end of Pete's Dragon.
The end of Pete's Dragon. Knowing this, watching Pete's Dragon, what would you say is the moral of the story? What's the point of this movie?
Don't tell your friends to be invisible and then go around and talk about them.
That's a really good lesson, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think the lesson might be a bad one, but I think it might be that like you shouldn't treat people who are different and new as being inherently bad. And that is a good lesson, but it's not the right way it's played out, because in the movie, the mean mayor and this teacher don't like Elliot until he saves them. And like, you should give people the benefit of the doubt. You shouldn't have to have them go out of their way to do something nice for you and then be like, this one's okay. But like, cause then not every stranger in the world can save your life, you know? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Like you need to learn to be like, oh, I should be more accepting of people without them having to like prove to me that they're good.
People mm-hmm. People belong by virtue of being human.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. You make room for them, like in that song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Room for everyone.
Just because it's called Pete's Dragon doesn't mean it belongs to Pete.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Loosely
associated with Pete.
Yeah. Pete's pal.
Pete's pal.
Pete's pal. That's what it should be called. Don't even mention dragon.
You know, very confusing advertising for this movie. Then we're not going to tell you there's a dragon. They can't know.
No, and for most of it, he's invisible.
Yes. The big lesson that I learned from watching Pete's Dragon is that sometimes redheads aren't the bad guys in a Disney movie.
Yes, that's a great point.
Because historically speaking, redheads have been villainized in Disney films, and this one, our protagonist was a redhead. So, you know,
justice for redheads.
Exactly, they get the redemption story in Pete's Dragon, which is nice. Yeah. Okay, let's cast ourselves. Who would we play in Pete's Dragon? What characters would you play in Pete's Dragon?
There's Nora.
There's Nora. There's the teacher. There's
Claire's Nora.
Oh, Claire is 1,000% Nora. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. No questions asked.
I love. What does she love? I don't know.
Candles on water.
No, thank you. I love candles on the water.
I'll be Paul because he has a mustache, and I'll just leave it at that.
Paul. Yes, amazing.
Paul, who was very striking looking, another very handsome man.
Yeah.
Like strong jaw, very strong features. Yeah.
Yes.
I'd wait for Paul too if I were Nora. Absolutely. Let's see.
We've got Hoagie, we've got Lampy, we've got the mayor.
Lampy. People. Who's crying to play Lampy? let's see. Rachel, I think you would play Pete.
Pete?
Yeah, you would be Pete. You would definitely be Pete. for sure.
I want that wig.
You then just need the wig and the uniform and you're good to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit on top of the parade float and go, hello, everyone.
It seems very fun. Hello, do you want to see the dragon? Let's count.
Mm-hmm. Elliot.
Elliot. And then, let's see, we have the
Gogans.
I have
one already. I know.
Who sang the best song? I'm trying to think of weird characters.
Small side characters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Possibly with no lines. Drew, he does this every time.
No, I know
he
exactly
chooses
who
somebody
I am in this movie.
That's the smallest character that
I'm just casting correctly for myself. Like if I were in an open call on Pete's Dragon, this is the part I would get.
It's gonna be somebody who's in like the background of a scene.
Can I tell you who it is? Ready?
Please. Okay.
I am the kid, the school kid, in the song where Nora is singing about making room for everyone. There's a part where there's a girl with glasses who's about to sing, and a boy from behind pushes her out of the way.
Oscar.
That part, that's me.
I totally forgot until you said that. I saw that, and I was like, this is an Oscar moment, and like an Oscar Montoya moment. Like you live for those moments. I know you do. It was so funny to me.
He just pushed her.
This is the difference between movies, from the 70s and movies today. Like somebody wasn't paying attention to that, and they were like, "Well, this is the shot we have, so we're using it." Like this, I don't think you would get that now. But yeah, it was definitely not supposed to be.
It looked weird. I was like, did he steal that line from this girl? I don't know what was happening.
Very
there
funny.
But she was about to launch into a song. I don't know if I don't think this was on purpose.
No, it wasn't at all.
It was fun. But anyway, I'm that kid. Wow. All right, now it is time to rate Pete's dragon out of 5 burnt apples. How many burnt apples do you give Pete's dragon?
Pete's dragon.
Oh, gosh.
It's okay. I guess I'll go. It's tricky because I definitely enjoyed it more than I thought I would because the memories I had of waking up to it were being like, what is going on? But then in context, I liked it much more. It makes sense to me that it's not as popular as Mary Poppins and other ones like that because it doesn't move and flow as much, but it does have some fun bits. And the animation is very cool. Very cool effects that they did there. I'll give it 3 burnt apples. Mm-hmm, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I'm going to... So, like, I weirdly, like, love this movie and loathe this movie. Like there's something really strange about Pete's Dragon that shouldn't work. And I think doesn't work, but for me, absolutely works. The weird musicality of some of the songs. First of all, the songs get a 5 out of 5 burnt apples. Right before we recorded, I listened to the whole damn soundtrack and loved most of the songs. I love the songs. I think everybody was like cheesing it up in such a fun way. Dr. Terminus was just like chewing all the scenery. Hoagie was chewing all, Mickey Rooney, need I say more. Everybody was really performing at a 10 out of 10. And Helen Reddy is a revelation to me. I don't think I've seen her in anything else. This is the first time I'm introduced to her. She's a bit odd when it comes to like, if I were to cast this movie, I probably wouldn't cast her, but I'm so glad she is Nora in this movie because she plays her in such a weird way. And her singing is kind of unusual as well. Mm-hmm. It feels very character-y, very performative, but like she sells it when it comes to the emotional part. So I think the emotional aspect of Pete's Dragon is very successful. It's just the in-between, like the getting from point A to point B is what's a little chunky, a little weird. But all things considered, I really enjoyed this movie. It could be a lot shorter, but I enjoyed the journey. This is getting 3.5 burnt apples for me.
Okay. I did not remember any of this movie, and I don't think I will remember any of this movie. I just thought it was so long. And I was like, you know, today it's a very different movie because it's a live action 70s Disney movie. And I'm realizing that's just not my thing. The songs, I can't believe you like them because I can't remember any of them except for Candle on the Water. That is the only one I remember. And it's great. So that song gets 5. But other than that, this movie was very long. It just seemed I thought it was going to be more fun. I thought it was good. And then I really liked Pete and Elliot. Like, I really liked Elliot. That's where I got, like, the Disney out of it. But the rest of it, I was like, what's going on? There's just a lot going on, and it didn't need to be so much. But then also nothing was going on at the same time. I don't know. So I'm going to give it just a straight in the middle 2.5 burnt apples.
I'm going to give it 3 for the reasons everyone else has said. It is weird. There's points of this movie you're like, where the fuck is Elliot? Like, it's been like a long time since we saw that fucking dragon. Even though he's invisible, I kind of feel like someone should have been like, you really need to put the dragon in like some of the scenes to like bump it up a little bit. But Candle on the Water, 5 apples, because that is really fucking good. So actually, I was thinking about something while you were, Ozzy, you were talking about how Helen Reddy is like sort of weird in the way she acts. And I think she is, because she's a singer who acts and not like an actor. I think on some level, the reason she is a little like stiff and prim and crisp is that she reminds me sort of Mary Poppins, whereas Mary Poppins is like those things as well. And that might've been a note or something, or that might've been something she had in her brain when she was playing this. But I would be shocked if Julie Andrews is not part of the reason that she's playing this role the way she is.
Oh, so you're saying she was influenced by Julie Andrews' performance?
It's consciously or not, I think it's just a very, it's, you don't see that sort of role in like a female lead that often, where it is, they're kind of a hard ass, but they're nice, but they're firm, and she's crisp is the only word I can think of to describe how she acts in this movie. And that's how I would describe Mary as well.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. Also, like, it's easy to have comparison between Mary Poppins and Pete's Dragon. They're so similar.
Yeah, they really are.
So similar. One was far more successful than the other one. And in my opinion, it's Pete's Dragon. But I digress. Well, y'all know, we talked about this in the Mary Poppins episode. My fatal flaw, yes, fatal, was that I saw Mary Poppins Returns before I saw Mary Poppins. And so that really affected my viewing of Mary Poppins.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Big mistake. No one should do that. Don't ever watch the sequel before we watch the first one. Anyway, we're neither here nor there. We talked about Pete's Dragon. Drew, thank you so much for being a guest on the pod. We loved your takes. Where can people follow you on social media?
I will tell you, but I have a question for you guys. What phase of like the Disney canon are you working through right now? Or are you just like bouncing around?
We are in the Disney Channel original movies, which we have been covering for two plus years.
Two plus years. But we take breaks after every year of the of DCOM releases. So right now we're in the in-between mode.
Can I make a suggestion? And you're not going to like it because it is another live-action 70s movie, but have you guys ever seen Watcher in the Woods?
Oh my God, of course. Yeah.
It's like the Disney horror movie. It is the weirdest fucking movie.
That ending.
It is not perfectly successful in everything it does, but like it is like Disney made a horror movie to terrify kids, and it stars Kyle Richards and Betty Davis. Yeah. And it is such a weird trip. I haven't seen it in like a decade, but if you guys want to get an example of like Disney at its maximum weird and not Mary Poppins like at all, try that one out and like maybe have a guest who's like a horror person, because it is essentially they made a horror movie for kids, which is crazy.
Oh yeah, this looks crazy.
And also the ending is absolutely bonkers bananas, out of this world. The ending stays with me
I had to, I'm like, I think I must have missed something. Like, I'm not, I don't understand what's happening. And like, watch it again. I'm like, no, that's how, that's what it is.
That's how it ends. Yeah. Wow. That's a great recommendation, Drew. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. But where can people follow you?
I'm the co-host of a show called Gayest Episode Ever. We talk about LGBT-focused episodes of classic sitcoms. We have done basically all of the sitcoms at this point. Even the most, like, Disney-era ABC that you can think of, most of them do something that approaches, like, a queer-themed episode. So just go to gayestepisodeever.com or look for it where you'd look for other things. Otherwise, find me on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E, and I tweet about gay stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's great. Everyone should follow Drew. Everyone. Let me ask you this, Drew. What is your, do you have a personal favorite gayest episode ever?
Dinosaurs.
Oh.
Really?
Dinosaurs did a gay episode. I was as surprised as anyone when we realized they did it. They do an episode where the son experiments with being an herbivore, and herbivore is a metaphor for being gay.
Interesting.
And he goes to like a herbivore bar, but he's like nervous that someone's gonna see him there, and like the parents are like disappointed that like he's experimenting with like being an herbivore, and it is one of the craziest things. Dinosaurs dealt with subjects that I think flew over most of our heads when we were little kids, but like they were talking about like lots of grown-up stuff that I did not catch when I was like eight.
Oh yeah, I gotta go see this right now. Fascinating.
Wait, is dinosaurs on Disney Plus?
I think it is, because I did start to watch a little bit of it, and interestingly enough, I think even the pilot is about his job and like not being paid enough and things like that. And I was like, even that, I was like, that's like a heavy topic that we don't always see in sitcoms.
So when the first Iraq War started, they did a two-part special about parroting, getting like making fun of the concept of going into a war for economic reasons, but saying that there are like legitimate like world stability reasons that you're going into war. And that is something that aired on TGIF, like in American homes. What? As we were watching like the Iraqi war happen, they were making fun of the reasons we were going into war. And I'm like, how did they get away with doing this? It is a very impressive thing.
This is why we need art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
Seriously. Wow. Okay, so that's some food for thought, y'all. Thank you so much for listening to Inside the Disney Vault. I'm Oscar.
I'm Claire.
And I'm Rachel.
Bye.
Bye.
Ow! Oh, wow. What an incredible episode of Inside the Disney Vault. I am howling at the moon because we get to go back into the Disney Channel vault to talk about which DCOM?
Cloud Nine.
Oh,
Dove Cameron, Nine. Luke Benward.
Oh, have you seen
We just saw
Rachel?
Him. Yeah, I have.
Oh, wow.
Snowboarding.
Okay. Yes, I had never heard of this, but I do see the poster now. And
yeah.
There you snowboarding.
We just saw Luke Benward in Girl vs. Monster.
And who did he play?
He was the boy.
Okay. The guitar player?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Gotcha.
You had me at hello.
The fact that you remember these songs,
that song
I'm
did
so
pop into my head.
That song
for
is
a couple
great.
Days after
you,
but now I can't.
Have
remember.
Me, hello. Oh, it's a banger. It's just as good as "I'll Be Your Candle on No Water."
Are you had me at hello? Are you team had me at hello? Or are you team candle in the water?
How can you
Let
decide?
Us know.
They're so similar.
Let
They're so similar. Know. One is an
so
Oscar nominated
playlist,
song.
They're both going on it.
That's so funny. You had me at hello is the 2000s version of candle in the water. Absolutely. Absolutely. Uh-huh. But listen, if you want to watch Cloud Nine, it's streaming on Disney Plus.
Yeah. And if you want to tell us whether your team had me at hello or team candle on the water, you can reach out to us on Inside the Disney Vault on Instagram or ITTV Podcast on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. And if you want even more content, you can become a patron at patreon.com/InsideTheDisneyVault. And that will give you access to video episodes. Also, our live watch parties, which we do monthly. And you can join the chat and hang out with us via
the
internet.
Absolutely. And while you're at it, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Mm-hmm. And even Spotify's doing the damn thing. So do that as well.
Oh, yeah. fun stuff, y'all. I'm excited to go snowboarding.
Yeah, we gotta put our jackets on to get into this. And then get on this slope.
Oh, yeah. It's getting cold in here.
I'm gonna go catch some clouds.
Go catch some clouds, baby.
We're gonna catch some clouds. Excuse us while we go catch some clouds. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
I'm Brian Husky. I'm bald.
And I'm Charlie Sanders, and I'm also bald. And we host Bald Talk on the Campfire Media Network.
Bald Talk is the podcast where two bald comedians talk to anyone bald about being bald.
But this show isn't just for baldies, Brian. Harrows will love it too.
Bald Talk gets into vulnerability, vanity, insecurity, and self-acceptance, reminding us that we all have our respective bald spots. Not that bald spots are a bad thing.
No way. I mean, my entire head is one big bald spot.
It is one huge, beautiful bald spot, Charlie.
Get Bald Talk on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, I have like a little bit of hair, but not like you. Like, you're really bald.
I'm truly bald.
Great. I mean, it's
I'm
great.
I'm balder than you.
You are balder than me. Only on Bald Talk.
Campfire.